Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Ihis Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The announcement from the EU is that they are developing a process now. They will begin making sure that there will be no automatic return. They say everyone will be given the right to apply for asylum. They will consider each case individually.
That's VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez in Izmir, Turkey. He says the EU is making changes in how it deports migrants to Turkey. Details coming up.
Also, the UN-backed unity government in Libya is moving to take control of the country's finances and institutions after the rival Tripoli-based government gave up power. And the International Criminal Court dismissed charges yesterday against Kenya's deputy president for his alleged role in the 2007-2008 post-election violence.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, in Libya, the UN-backed unity government is moving to take control of the country's finances and institutions. The move comes after the rival Tripoli-based government gave up power. The French news agency AFP reports the concession came late yesterday by the militia-run regime that had control of Tripoli since 2014. It had repeatedly blocked attempts by Prime Minister-designate Fayez al-Sarraj to enter the country. However, the government of national accord still does not have the support of a second rival government based in Tobruk that had claimed international support. The government of national accord used its Facebook page to order all government ministries and institutions to respect its authority and to start using its official logo. The AFP says it also ordered the central bank and the audit bureau to immediately freeze all state accounts except for funds to pay government employees' salaries. While efforts to restore a Libyan government continue, Islamic State militants continue their attacks on oil fields. Analysts say it's an attempt to undermine the government of national accord.
For a reaction to the latest developments in Libya, senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke to Hani Khalaf, Egypt's former ambassador to Libya. He says the actions by the unity government are a positive development.
Of course, I call this a must. The regaining of the confidence of all groups and regions of Libya and all institutions on the soil of Libya by the government should be considered the first priority. And I am sure the UN will support the unity government in all its actions to realize such a kind of homogeneity and support from different institutions.
But the government of national accord has yet to secure a similar concession from another rival administration based in Tobruk, which has long claimed international legitimacy because it was appointed by the parliament elected in 2014. How significant is to secure a similar concession from Tobruk?
Well, it is so important to have all these kind of concessions, or let us call it recognition by different governments, both in Tripoli and in Tobruk, because there is another one in Tripoli with Khalifa al-Ghuil and Nouri Boussahmine. But the Tobruk one is the most internationally known government, and one should use a little bit of wise approaches in approaching the Tobruk government. I should recommend that the Egyptians may be utilized as intermediate in influencing the government in Tobruk to cooperate and recognize completely the official character of the newly unity government in Tripoli. You know, Mr. Shenawi, there are so many assets that Egypt has in the eastern area of Libya, mainly in Tobruk. Members of the parliament, members of the so-called Karama army, officers are linked in a way or another with some Egyptian families and tribal ties and marriages and maybe economic and trade interests. The same religious and educational, cultural traditions are similar. So Egyptians could be of help in approaching this Tobruk government.
Final question. What are the major challenges facing the unity government in Libya?
Oh, yes. There are so many major challenges facing this unity government. First of all, how to solve the problem of the proliferation of the arms and weaponry among various groups and militia with a view to establish or re-establish a new consolidated Libyan army on a rather unified, modern way. The second challenge should be to establish new bridges for communication and cooperation with more and various political and community ethnic groups of Libyan people, including the Tabu tribes, Tuaregs, and maybe Mosrata families as well, to consolidate the idea of the unity government itself. Lastly, one of the other challenges, I suppose, is how to make master plans in cooperation with neighboring countries and European Union and the UN organs to fight the expanding terrorist organizations such as Daesh or ISIS and the Qaeda from certain parts of Derna and Benghazi. So these are the most important three challenges I can see presenting the priorities for the new government in Tripoli.
That was Hani Khalaf, Egypt's former ambassador to Libya. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi.
The deportation of migrants and refugees from Greece to Turkey is expected to resume on Friday. Several hundred more people are expected to be returned under the deal between the EU and Turkey that took effect on March 20th. After returning about 200 migrants Monday from Lesbos and other Greek islands, the EU has paused its operations to make some changes. VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez is following the story from Izmir, Turkey. He spoke to Joe DiCapua about the EU announcement to change how migrants are treated.
A rather significant announcement. In fact, it helps explain why there's been a delay in the transport of deportees, which had been expected for Wednesday, now pushed back to Friday. We have both Greek and Turkish officials saying they are expecting to bring another approximate 200 migrants from Greece to Turkey. The announcement from the EU is that they are developing a process now. They will begin making sure that there will be no automatic return. They say everyone will be given the right to apply for asylum. They will consider each case individually. That is to say, they will take vulnerabilities into consideration. This is after a pretty significant wave of protests, especially on Lesbos itself, by international human rights activists who condemned the deportation, saying they're not being done in a transparent manner and that the people who are being brought to Turkey, in some cases, their lives are in danger and the process is therefore irresponsible and dangerous. So this announcement was meant to counter those accusations. And on Wednesday, approximately 70 staffers with the EU's asylum agency arrived in Lesbos to begin setting up a process that essentially begins on Thursday. They'll start interviewing the migrants who are set to be deported to Turkey, hearing their cases individually in their language, which they weren't doing before, apparently, according to human rights activists and according to some of the migrants who were returning. They will have their cases heard. A determination is made as to whether they are eligible for asylum. If the determination is that they are not and that they will be deported to Turkey, they will now have 5 days to appeal that decision.
Now, this sounds like it could really slow down this whole process. The migrants and refugees on the Greek islands are now in basically detention camps, are they not?
The ones who are set to be deported are being held in a detention camp known as Moria. That currently houses, according to Médecins Sans Frontières, about 3,000 people. It was designed to hold 2,000. So overcrowding conditions are pretty severe.
with 70 people processing these applications, which at least Wednesday morning, the number reached at about 1,000 people who had expressed a desire to apply for asylum. Well, you can do the math and figure out that it is going to take a long time to process them. The estimate, as explained to me by an EU official on Wednesday, is that they will be able to process a maximum of 50 cases per day. So when you have 3,000 on hold, that gives you a sense of how long it will take, a very long time.
Now, we're reaching you in Izmir, Turkey. We've had a lot of reports from Greece, where many of the migrants and refugees had arrived, but not so much from Turkey itself. Can you tell me what's happening there?
In Turkey, it's a process that's very much like in Greece, very much out of public view. And that's for a purpose, because government is conscious of the fact that people in Turkey are very nervous about reabsorbing potentially thousands of people. The Turkish government has initially welcomed the migrants at the start of this crisis, welcomed them as brothers. But then when it became clear that their stay was not going to be short and that Turkey might have to be responsible for them longer than it expected to be, that attitude began to change. It started to turn into a situation where Turkish people became nervous about whether their jobs would be taken by less expensive labor, if you would, and also the prospect of having so many people camped out in their cities, including here in Izmir. Some people saying they're glad that a lot of the city parks are now clear, that the migrants are no longer present. Others say, well, we're losing business in terms of hotel rooms, in terms of food, sales, things like that.
That's VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez from Izmir, Turkey. He spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The UN-backed unity government in Libya is moving to take control of the country's finances and institutions after the rival Tripoli-based government gave up power. And the deportation of migrants and refugees from Greece to Turkey is expected to resume on Friday. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For 7 years, Boko Haram militants have waged a fundamentalist insurgency in three of Nigeria's northeastern states, killing 20,000 and displacing more than 1 million civilians. After a three-week joint Nigerian-Cameroon military campaign, officials have announced the capture of more than 300 rebel fighters and the release of more than 2,000 captive civilians. VOA's David Arnold spoke with reporter Abubakar Haruna Galanchi in Kano about the military offensive.
The Nigerian Defense Headquarters, located in Abuja, stated that they have arrested almost 306 members of the Boko Haram with joint operation between the Nigerian army and the Cameroonian troops around Maiduguri and Adamawa. That is where the Boko Haram located. It took them almost 2 to 3 weeks, people, which later they successfully arrested 306 members of Boko Haram, including one of the top leaders of the Boko Haram at the area.
Were they able to identify the name of this leader of Boko Haram?
Today, they didn't identify the actual name of the man. It can be recalled that in less than 1 week, the leader of the Boko Haram, that is Abubakar Shekau, appeared in a new video saying that he's calling to all his members to surrender to Nigerian troops as well as the Cameroonian and the other neighboring countries' troops. That's what he's saying. For now, they spent almost 7 years fighting Nigerian government. For now, it's okay for them, and they can surrender to Nigerian government to stop the normal bloodshed.
The report that we received yesterday also included the possibility that about 2,000 civilians who had been captured by Boko Haram have been released in this operation.
It's correct.
Is there any indication that this is a legitimate video that actually came from the leaders of Boko Haram?
Even from the Nigerian people, some of them are saying the video, they believe the video 100% is Boko Haram, while others are saying has already since more than 3 years ago is being killed by Nigerian troops. Consider the situation that Nigerian government is seeing. This conflict has already come to an end. But the problem is from time to time in a week, like two or three in a week, you can have that maybe in Adamawa or Yobe, Maiduguri, or some part of Cameroon territory, you have bomb explosion or gun attack in the mosque or in a church or something like that. The only the possibility for throwing Boko Haram or for ending this conflict is when the two governments, the Nigerian government and the Cameroonian government, when they join hands.
That was Abubakar Haruna Galadanchi in Kano talking with VOA's David Arnold.
The French news agency reports that Nigeria has established a rehabilitation camp for former Boko Haram fighters. It quotes the Nigerian military as saying the camp will help reintegrate them into society. This would include vocational training. However, few other details have been released about the camp, including its location and the number of former Boko Haram members there.
Albert Camus is world famous as the French-Algerian author of The Stranger and other philosophical novels. He was also the courageous editor of La Combat, the widely read newspaper of the French resistance to the Nazi occupation during World War II. Throughout his life, Camus struggled against what he saw as the brutality and absurdity of modern life, with its dehumanizing ideologies and wars. On March 28, 1946, in a historic speech he called The Human Crisis, Camus outlined his worldview at New York's Columbia University. He offered a roadmap for moral clarity, nonviolence, and brotherhood. Last week, to mark the 70th anniversary of the speech, actor Viggo Mortensen read The Human Crisis to a sold-out crowd at Columbia University. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on Camus' speech and its relevance today.
Camus' speech was born of the horrors the world had endured during World War II, which cost an estimated 60 million lives. And yet it was the post-war period that concerned Camus most. In his view, the world continued to be ruled by what he called the cult of efficiency and abstraction that underlay the German atrocities. Here's an excerpt from the address as read by Viggo Mortensen in a new translation by Yale University Camus scholar Alice Kaplan.
Yes. There is a human crisis because in today's world, we can contemplate the death or the torture of a human being with a feeling of indifference, friendly concern, scientific interest, or simple passivity. Yes, there is a human crisis, since putting a person to death can be regarded with something other than the horror and scandal it ought to provoke.
Camus gave actual examples of cruelties endured by people he had known during World War II. A Greek mother of three sons forced by an SS officer to choose which one would be allowed to live, and a landlady who, when addressed by a renter who had been tortured all night, told him,
I never interfere with my tenant's business. In Lyon, one of my comrades is dragged from his cell for a third round of questioning. Since his ears have been badly torn during a previous session, he is wearing a bandage around his head. The German officer who interrogates him is the same man who had conducted the previous sessions. And yet he asks him, with an air of affectionate concern, how are your ears doing?
This casual cruelty and detachment made no sense to Camus.
Passion, even deadly passion, would have been preferable. For passion runs its course, and another passion, another cry from the flesh or the heart, might replace it. But a man capable of tender concern for ears that he has only recently torn is not passionate. He is a mathematical calculation that cannot be restrained or reasoned with.
As the editor of La Combat, the underground journal of the French resistance, Camus had been in the belly of that beast. According to Suleiman Bashir Dian, professor of philosophy and Francophone studies at Columbia University, the human crisis was Camus' response to the absurdity of the human predicament. Part of Camus' solution, says Dion, was to place morality above politics or any ideology that says what history must be.
Politics meaning, in this case, in the context of the lecture, that you consider history to be true, events to be somehow necessary. And that gives justification and legitimizes violence.
Here's another excerpt from Camus' 1946 speech.
From the negative impetus that was the starting point of our revolt, we drew an ethos of liberty and sincerity. Yes, it was the act of communication that was needed to oppose the murderous world. That's what we understood going forward. And this communication must be maintained today if we are to protect ourselves from murder. As we know now, we must fight against injustice, against slavery and terror, because these three scourges are what makes silence reign among men, what builds barriers between them, what renders them invisible to one another and prevents them from finding the only value that might save them from this desperate world, the extended brotherhood of men struggling against fate.
Camus said that the venom did not disappear when the Nazis were defeated. Indeed, he asserted that each of us carries the venom in our own hearts, and we can sense this by the way we regard one another with vestiges of anger. Dion believes that this observation is as true today as it was in 1946. He adds that today it is mostly terrorists, not Nazis, who insist on the absolute truth of their beliefs and who commit unspeakable violence on a global scale. Like the Nazis, many religious extremists are humiliated and impoverished outliers whom society has ignored or shunned. For Camus, social justice and an end to violence go hand in hand.
We can't pretend to escape from history, for we are in history. We can only aspire to do battle in the arena of history to save from it that part of man which does not belong to it. We want only to rediscover the paths to a civilization where man, without turning his back on history, will no longer be enslaved by it, where the obligation each person incurs with regard to others will be balanced by time for reflection, pleasure, and the happiness every person owes themselves.
That was the actor Viggo Mortensen reading Albert Camus' 1946 speech, The Human Crisis, at Columbia University's Miller Theater in New York last week. The speech was translated from the French by Alice Kaplan of Yale University. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. And tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of development partners in promoting democracy and good governance in Africa. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is our moment. Together with footballers like Steven Pienaar, we are speaking out to end malaria.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Let's do it.
United, we can beat malaria.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the Sunny Side of Sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC, GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.